Well, welcome everybody to this installment of the Rice Report. We are actually in a temporary studio as we speak, getting ready to complete build out here in another studio space in the next couple of weeks. So bear with us here. But we are really in the middle of a ton of things that are happening financially. You know, the general gist of Rice Report in the next few weeks, we'll go back to my original podcast, which cover the three things you should never talk about. They tell you should never talk about money, politics, or religion. And unfortunately, those are probably the three most important things in our life. So we're going to go ahead and break that barrier and begin to discuss how all these things work together. But for now, we're going to focus in on financials. I think it's very important right now for every investor around the world or just normal person around the world to understand what's happening in this nation and around the globe. Right now, we find ourselves in a very, very precarious scenario. Last night was the State of the Union. Today is March 8th. So we are almost halfway through the last month of the first quarter of 2024. Congratulations to all of you. We've made it through the year 2023 completely. And the world has not fallen apart. The world will not fall apart, but it is going to go through some severe growing pains in the process. And that's really what we're living in right now. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to run through the things that I think are most important to watch from a money perspective right now, which is going to begin obviously with government data, which is about as useful as the old Onion or the Inquirer, these old papers. There's really, really a lot of bad stuff coming out. I'm going to run through the banking sector where we are right now, cyber warfare that no one's talking about at this moment, the impact of illegal migrants in this country. But with all of it, I'm going to begin with a summary of the State of the Union, but I'm also going to run through the energy battle that's about to unleash on the world. And it's very obvious right now that the weaponization of energy will be the next forefront in this kind of covert war that we're in. We're certainly in a cyber war. I'll prove to that to you in a moment. But we're also in the middle of a financial war, a currency war. So the BRICS nations right now are mounting themselves. They're building their own platforms for interchangeable digital currency. Digital currency is a topic we'll cover here in the next 20 or 30 minutes. The stock market, what's going on there? Interesting things happening in the banking sector, but we're also going to cover some interesting things happening around the country that people just aren't paying attention to that I think are really important. Some are really good and some are bad. And even the ones that are good have an explanation behind them. So let's go ahead and hop into everything right now with understanding what's happening from a government perspective. So if you listen to the mainstream media, which I advise you don't, unless you like that old song, Tell Me Lies, Tell Me Sweet Little Lies, it is pretty much at this point in time a Broadway musical, a Broadway play. There's really not anything coming out of them that's standard or useful or accurate. I'll give you an example, because a lot of people will say, well, you know, I've been trusting the government for 100 years. A great example came out this morning. So the jobs report came out today. Don't bank on that jobs report. It's better than expected. Just like 17 out of the last 18 jobs reports were better than expected. Meanwhile, friends of mine are being laid off from major companies. People are being laid off all over the country. The jobs report is really the pinnacle of this deception that's happening, and it's everywhere, and it should concern all of you. I'm not trying to scare you into anything or be a conspiracy theorist to you, but at the same time, conspiracy theory is about 90% true at this point in time, and some of them are more obvious than others. The obvious one is the jobs report. So again, 17 out of the last 18 jobs reports have now been revised down. Last month, in January, the January jobs report came out, and the government told us 353,000 new jobs were created, and the market went crazy. And people got excited, and they started buying NVIDIA stocks, and they started doing all these other things. And in the middle of it all, they revised these. So January's jobs numbers were revised down about an hour before February's jobs report today, down from 353 to 229. So almost 130,000 jobs that they told us were created are actually a mythological creature. These are important things. The oil and gas industry is another one that you need to pay attention to. The EIA, our energy board, has been telling the American people for the last year now that we are producing more oil in this country than we ever have before, and everything is great. It's going to be fine. This is simply not true. If you look up the amount of rigs on the market, if you're in oil and gas, you'll find out that this is not true. So if we don't have as many rigs on the market as we had a couple of years ago, we must be drilling the greatest oil in the history of the world. So it's up to you to decide whether or not you believe these. I personally don't have any problem saying I don't trust any of these numbers, because I think there's a purpose behind it. If you haven't noticed yet, we are living through a very strange time that no one 10 years ago could have predicted, except for a few. And this is for control. You're living through an engineered consent model. Everything is designed to engineer your consent to do things. When I tell you there's a 353,000 jobs and there's only 229 in reality, if that's even a real number, I'm engineering your consent that we're doing a good job as an administration. This is happening all across the board. The State of the Union last night was, I don't even know how you phrase what I saw last night. It was like a drunk Saturday Night Live event. Our president began out by with his speech about the state of our union by talking about how important it was for us to continue to send money to Ukraine. So the most important thing on our president's mind is raising your taxes to send money overseas to a foreign nation that's so corrupt they're not even allowed into NATO. Really let that digest. Whether you support Ukraine or you don't, it doesn't matter to me at all. It's America, you're allowed to do what you want. But you should understand the impacts of what these very dangerous speeches and rally cries for voters mean. The rest of his speech and near the end was about all the free stuff he's going to provide, free healthcare for kindergartners, free this, free that. Nothing is free. If you don't understand how this country works, let me give you a quick rundown. This nation is actually works like a corporation. And our boss and CEO of America is the Federal Reserve, which is a central bank, which is a private company. This private company is owned by very few people. Very few people even know who owns the central bank. The central bank literally determines what happens in this country. Politicians, elected or selected, whatever you believe, are nothing more than salesmen who engineer your consent to continue to create debt slavery throughout this country. Every time the government gets something approved, every time a mortgage is paid, every time a mortgage is issued, every time a building is bought, every time a car is done on a loan, this prints more money. It's a never-ending stream of printed money by the central bank. It's the greatest job in the world if you're a central bank. All you have to do is print fake money and collect real assets and time and value from other people. That's how this country works. So these politicians continue to talk about all the free things they're going to give people that'll help people, not explaining to you that every time that they do that, it's going to raise your taxes and our national debt, which is currently growing at $1 trillion every 100 days. They are printing $1 trillion every 100 days. If you don't know what a trillion is, think of it this way. You have $1 million. When I grew up, $1 million, if you had $1 million, you're the richest person in the world. Today, not so much. $1 billion is 1,000 millions. A trillion is 1,000 billions. If you actually do the math on this, these are astronomical numbers that can never be repaid. We're at a point where they can never be repaid. We have the widest trade gap in 15 years. This is also a very big point of concern if you're an investor or just an economist paying attention to things. We have anywhere between 12 and 15 million illegal aliens in this country that are being completely paid for by this government. And again, people get angry about that, but what they don't realize is the government doesn't pay for these people, you do. That debt is paid back by us. Congress has the best job in the world. All they do is, the central bank tells them they want to print another $4 trillion to get more debt. They find clever ways of telling you they're going to help you while at the same time they're creating more debt around you and your children. In fact, the pace that we're on right now, by the time my 10-year-old and 14-year-old are my age, they'll be paying about 70 to 75% in taxes every year to cover the debt that exists today. If you have children, if you have grandchildren, this is something to take very seriously. Centralized currency printed by central banks is a disaster waiting to happen. I'd advise you to read a few books before we get into more of the numbers. I'd advise you to go to thegreattaking.com and read The Great Taking by David Webb. It talks about the fact that all of our securities laws have been changed in the last 30 years, where essentially we already kind of don't own anything. And debt is a major creator of power for those who can build the debt and create the debt. I'd also advise you to read The Fourth Turning. We are, from my estimates, we are in year 79 of The Fourth Turning, which means it's the segment or area of chaos and crisis. It's pretty accurate. Read The Fourth Turning. I think that you'll enjoy it. I think it'll give you a good rundown as to where we are today financially. And I will say all this, I'm going to give you some bad news because that's pretty much what we have in the economy. But I can tell you right now that there is a war taking place in many different areas of the world, psychological war. We are in fifth generation warfare. We are at war. The war is not bombs and guns and bullets and planes. It's a war for your mind and it's being fought with information. So the more clear you can get on what reality is, the better decisions you can make for you and your family. We are absolutely in a financial war globally. for power of currency. The world is trying to figure out who will be the next purveyor of a central or a global reserve currency. I personally believe that when this is said and done, there will be no global reserve currency because it just creates ultimate power. Because no matter what happens, human beings run central banks, human beings run everything, and human beings are proven to be very corruptible by money. These are very interesting times that we live in. But I want to get into banks because I believe at the end of this, I think all of the things that we're going through financially and that we will go through, and I'm going to give you some predictions for the year. Most people don't realize what's happening in the markets and in nations, in societies, and how seriously it is and how long tail the impacts can be. And right now, the center point of this is the banking system, which, to be honest with you, has to completely go. It's nothing more than a debt servicer for the central banks. All banks come from central banks. They all answer to the boss. And we are at war with an immovable object at this point in time. The central banks are, at this point in time, an immovable object that I believe in the next 2 or 3 years, we'll find ourselves in a financial position that we never imagined, either on the good side or the bad side, depending on what happens in the next 12 months of humanity. But getting to the bank. So right now, bank profits were just disclosed to be 44% lower. So the Q4 2023 banking statistics holistically for the banking industry saw a 44% drop in profits. This is a real problem. The way the banking system works, and I know most people watching this show are accredited investors, but for those who aren't, I think it's important to understand that banks run on debt. Your money becomes debt to a bank. When you go to a bank and deposit $100, the bank takes it and they owe you money. That's debt on their books. We are approaching an era where they may be able to convert debt to equity through a bank bail-in, which I'm going to walk through in a moment. The FDIC has just added 8 new banks to their watch list, totaling $66.3 billion in depositor capital. That's $66.3 billion of normal people's money that's at risk because of faulty management of banks and lowering profits because banks are really make their money lending your money. A bank will take your $100. They will go to the Fed. They will get $1,000 from the Fed. They will make 10 $100 loans, and some of them pay and they make money. Some of them don't, and they lose money. And right now we are in an era where car loan defaults are at an all-time high. Just recently, housing defaults just passed a decades-long high, very much like 2008. Commercial lending is in an absolute death spiral as we speak. I know there's plenty of people who are hopeful. I'm not. I think that the commercial real estate market, the lending market, commercial real estate is commercial real estate, except for the fact that right now you're seeing $500 million buildings that were bought 4 years ago selling for $89 million in San Francisco, Boston, New York, Chicago. This is happening all over the country, very much under the radar. But there are fire sales to get out of this debt. And the new buyers are coming in and assuming loans and buying these buildings in cash. There's a lot of good opportunities in commercial real estate. I personally like the space, but I won't touch it until 2025. I think there's a lot more room on the downside there for pricing and lending. But this is all really summarized. We just had an event 2 days ago that really summarizes the world we live in. New York Community Bank, which is on the list of FDIC watch list, I think they were on it first. New York Community Bank has lost about 87% of its publicly traded value in its stock. 46% of that came within about a 2-hour period 2 days ago. And then they halted trading. So they stopped trading. This bank is failing. It's declining. And they wanted to halt trading in the bank. So we have already seen interference on a trade. If it's going to fall, it should fall. That's a free market. But when people start to stop or halt trading so no one can buy or sell that security, that's interference from regulatory bodies. And we've seen this time over time. Our country currently is not actually a free nation because we have about 52%. We're socialist at this point in time because 52% of the market, the government has their hands in it. That means that you are in a Keynesian economic model when the world should be striving far towards Austrian economics, which are merit-based and centered around the individual, not the collective. If you don't understand the difference between Keynesian and Austrian economics, I advise you take a weekend and grab a few books. The Road to Serfdom by Hayek is a great book for that. I would advise reading it. But we are certainly in this battle between Keynesian and Austrian economics and who will be in power. Now, New York Community Bank collapsing was by itself, you know, not a surprise to me, but a surprise to many in the market. And of course, the market was being impacted as a whole. When banks collapse, who house the money? They house the money not just for individuals, but for companies. Panic ensues. So they halted trading, and less than an hour later, Powell, who runs the Federal Reserve, came out and made a statement that was completely contrarian to what he said 30 days ago. 30 days ago, Powell said that that they do not foresee interest rate cuts in 2024 at all. And the market absorbed it, but the market still priced in three interest rate cuts to drive trading and volume. So these things happen all the time. It's a shell game at this point in the stock market. But Powell came out an hour after a bank had their trading halted because they were collapsing so hard and said, well, actually, we're considering making rate cuts in the early summer. This, in my opinion, is campaign and election interference at its highest. We have a failing economy. We are more in debt than we can ever possibly pay back. We continue to print money. We continue to create fiat currency that has no accountability on government spending. Sound money is the only way out of this entire mess that we are in. And when you have a fiat model where central banks can print whatever they want, there's no accountability on government spending. There's no accountability on homelessness or any of these initiatives that are supposed to save the world. I think we've spent anywhere between $200 and $300 billion on homelessness, and homelessness has tripled in the last 10 years because there's no accountability when the money is cheap and printed for free. But this signal to me, this is the way I interpret a bank collapsing, trading halted, and then the Fed coming out and saying, we may lower interest rates. The market went from 250 points down to up 125 within minutes. That is how you manipulate a market. Whether rates drop or not is not really the point. The point is, why did he come out an hour after a bank halted its trading? And the most interesting thing in this is that the former head of the Treasury under Trump, Steve Mnuchin, is going to be bailing this bank out on a private scale. So that is a very interesting thing. Now, bank credit is contracting for the second time in 50 years. The last time bank credit contracted this hard was 2008. And there's a reason for this. Most people don't know that the short-term lending program for banks, which was created right after the crisis, which allows them short-term loans. You know, you and I have to go through our social security numbers, a credit check, fill out an application, urine test, test your children just to get a loan to buy a house or a car. But banks basically just have to make a phone call to the Fed to get money anytime they want it. That ends on March 11th. You are going to see massive, massive widespread bankruptcies within banks within the next 6 to 8 months. That's almost inevitable at this point. Another program that's ending, causing this credit contraction within the banks, is the reverse repo market. And what I found out talking about this for so long is that many, many people around the world have no idea what the reverse repo market is. And that's probably by design, because it's maybe the shadiest program ever created in banking. Let me identify the reverse repo market in as simple terms as I possibly can. The provider of the reverse repo funding market is the Federal Reserve of New York. So essentially, the Federal Reserve of New York is a pawn shop for banks to commit accounting fraud. It started in 2009 or 2010, right after the crisis. This isn't a long-standing government program. But what it does is it allows banks who carry, again, banks take your money, they get more money from the Fed, they make investments. Some work, some don't. When they don't, you and I have to realize our losses. We get tax benefits for it. Banks don't have to realize their losses. So what the reverse repo market allows a bank to do, I'll give you a simple example. I'm JP Morgan Chase. I made a $1 billion investment or some loans or a package of land or whatever I invested in, and it lost $600 million. So I now have only $400 million in value. I've lost $600 million, but I have my quarterly reporting coming up to my publicly traded shareholders. And I certainly don't want my shareholders to see that I have $600 million in unrealized losses, because I still haven't sold that investment. So I haven't realized the loss. So what I'm going to do as JP Morgan is I'm going to go to the New York Fed under the reverse repo program. I'm going to say, you know what? I invested $1 billion. I only have $400 million in value. Why don't you give me $400 million in value for this unrealized loss? You carry it for a while, and then I'll buy it back from you at a little bit of an interest. That is exactly how the reverse repo market has worked since 2009. What it allows companies to do. So if I'm JP Morgan, I'm able to go, well, you know, I don't even have that investment on my books that I lost $600 million on. But what I did do is I just added $400 million in liquidity and cash to my bank statement. This has been going on since 2009, and that program ends on March 31st. So when you eliminate short-term funding and you cut off the pawn shop for our large banks to be able to claim that they're profitable when they're not, you are looking at a recipe for banking chaos. Add that on top of the fact that the BRICS nations are forming their own trade coalitions, their own currencies, all these other things are happening right now. This country is in really, really uncharted territory. In 250 years since the American Revolution, we really haven't been close to this. The Great Depression doesn't even compare to the amount of parallel potential crises that we face today. The banking sector itself also has restrictions. I've talked about on these podcasts many different times. After the crash of 2008, there was a bill passed called the Dodd-Frank Act. In that act, it eliminated bank bailouts. Now, by law, bank bailouts are actually illegal. The government is not allowed, per the Dodd-Frank Act, they're not allowed to just come in and bail out a bank and its depositors. They don't care. If you haven't noticed, our government does not care about the Constitution or laws. They do whatever they want to do, and then they resolve it later. Just like jobs reports. Tell people there's a lot of jobs, and then when they're not looking, readjust it down to close to the truth. Now, in this scenario that we find ourselves in, with this, this deceptive market, which is polite, we are going to see regional banks and small banks all around the country literally go through a storm like you have never seen before, because the Dodd-Frank, and maybe a storm that you have never thought you could experience before, this Dodd-Frank Act, since there's no bailouts from the government to the bank, they allow bail-ins. And a bail-in means that a bank can convert its debt to equity at any time to bail themselves out. Your money is their debt. And I've had a couple comments from talking about this in the past. That'll never happen here. Well, it happened in Cyprus in 2014. They had bail-ins in the nation of Cyprus, and about 2/3 of the nation woke up in the morning and had no more money. Will that happen here? I don't think we'll see to that severity, but severity in our banking system is like a stone being thrown into a lake. The waves eventually hit back on the shore. That's really where we are right now. So I would pay attention to that and start decentralizing your money as best you can into, you know, gold, silver, hard assets, Bitcoin, a cryptocurrency if you think it's good for you. And I'm going to talk about those things in just a moment. But this is truly where we are. So to give you the intended purpose of what a communist nation would do to take over another nation, they would, you know, simple military tactics. They would try to reduce supply chains, communications, power. And at the end of the day, they would want complete control of the money supply. I believe we are in a communist Bolshevik revolution in this country, which is why we're seeing so many crazy things that offend freedom. And I think at the end of the day, these banks collapsing, these government programs being shut down for bank lending, is a large consolidation play to nationalize the banking system. With thousands and thousands of small independent banks around the country, that's hard to manage. But it's very easy to manage if they all are destroyed and all the deposits go to four large banks that they already control. These are really interesting times to live in and things to think about. It's always important to put on a critical thinking hat when anything happens right now, because there are about three or four different possibilities that could come from every decision made from the government, from the markets, from regulators, and from legislators. These are really important times to pay attention. Because if these banking collapses do occur, which I believe they will, this will be a perfect time to implement a CBDC. Now, I hear all the time there's a bill passed where Congress has to approve a CBDC. So let's talk about CBDCs for a moment. This is central bank digital currency. I personally want nothing to do with it or with anyone who thinks it's a good idea. We have had digital currency since the year 1979 when the debit card launched, but they actually called it an uncredit card in 1979, the uncredit card. We have been already engineered for a cashless society. We've been engineered to accept that credit cards, debit cards are better than cash. And late last year, the FedNow program passed in this country, which essentially gives all intelligence agencies and the entire United States government full access to your finances anywhere that they are digital. So your bank account, your stock accounts, all of your accounts are already fully visible without a warrant by all of our government and federal agencies. And they engineered our consent for this based on the premise of faster payments between banks. Be careful of that. That is exactly how cheaper, faster, better are very strong adjectives that people use to engineer consent for something that's bad for you. Now, I know that there are bills passed where they say that we need congressional approval to have a CBDC. And Trump has already said he will not have one. Biden hasn't said a word about it. That speaks volumes. You don't need to look further than the last 3 weeks of your life to determine that our government, and especially the central bank, does not really care whether or not Congress needs approval for anything. So take that with a grain of salt. But I also don't think that the government will spawn off CBDCs themselves. I think that they will use private companies to engineer your consent for this. Now, digital currency from a central bank is bad, period. But digital currency itself is not bad. The issue becomes whether or not it's programmable. And since we have no access to any of the backdoor technology information, the American people will have no way of running through the code of a CBDC to determine whether or not it's programmable. That's a real big problem and something we should watch for rigorously. So programmable, most people might not know what that means. Programmable means they will write a program behind the token or the digital coin that they give you in exchange for your deposits at the bank or your stock certificates or your options or your bonds. And, you know, if you said, I don't like this administration, I think our country is falling to pieces on social media, it would be programmed where they would have control over it and basically say, you've been a bad boy. You cannot use this money for 7 days. Or you've been a bad boy, a dissenter on social media, and you can only use this money within a 5 mile radius of your home. These are not conspiracy theories. There are patents, there are white papers written all over the place. This is the final piece. If there ever are central bank digital currencies in our nation, freedom is pretty much eliminated through financial censorship. So something to watch out for. So we're talking a lot about electronics and digital and all these other things, which are all powered by energy. Now, where we are right now with Ukraine and Russia, India and Pakistan has a lot of conflict there. We just sent $1.2 billion in drones to India. I expect them to be used in some capacity. Palestine and Israel for about the 50th time since the 50s or 60s. And conflicts growing between Iran, conflicts growing all throughout the Middle East. And then, of course, we have potential conflict in our own soil from illegal migrants that have already cost us almost $1 trillion just to get here for whatever reason. Really think about why they're here, by the way. It's not just for votes. There are definite nefarious purposes for many of these people. There are, don't get me wrong, there are probably some illegal people here trying to escape their country, create a better life. All of us were immigrants at one point, our family lines. I get it. But in these days and times when you're handing out people $10,000 in New York City to beat up police in the street and there's really no consequences for it, you can expect chaos to ensue. We are in an economic decline. In an economic decline, historically, dating all the way back to the French Revolution, all large economies that fall, that crumble, when their economies get to a point where we're very close to, if not already there, generally chaos is used as a way to distract people from their financial woes and ultimately designed to engineer more consent to take away more freedoms to restore order. These are not theories. This is literal history since the French Revolution. So be wary of that. The economic impact of these illegals is now projected to be anywhere between $600 and $900 billion per year and many, many American jobs lost, so on and so forth. Rent is now unaffordable for 50% of this country, not owning a home, but rent. Yet they're giving away zero down, zero interest homes to illegals in the state of California, which should be, I lived there for many years. It is commie-fornia to me. Watch what happens in California. That's what tyranny looks like and how it's imposed very slowly. It's now speeding up more than it ever has. But the real purpose here is that in the digital space, digital anything comes from energy. And I believe that by midsummer, we will be in a full energy war. Energy will be weaponized between nations. So as more and more nations find themselves in conflicts or at war, the amount of energy, the oil, the gas, the coal, the nuclear, the uranium, all these commodities that generate energy will become weaponized, driving prices up for enemies. We've already seen what we will do to get oil. To get oil from Venezuela, we released 8 sanctions against a communist nation to buy their dirty oil so we could refine it here for gasoline. And then Congress tried to pass a bill to save the border that included selling, I think, 3.5 million gallons of ready-made gasoline for emergencies. Our government has sold off most of our strategic petroleum reserve, and they're trying to sell off most of our refined gasoline reserve to foreign nations for a profit so that the GDP looks more prosperous to foolish investors who aren't thinking critically about the information they read. Very dangerous times. So I do see like nations like Bangladesh, a very small Asian nation. They have a very robust hydrocarbon basin called the Bangladesh Shelf. They are now entertaining offers for drillers to release their own oil. When countries like this who haven't drilled for oil in a very, very long time start looking for bids and offers, people in governments know a lot more about what's going to happen than we do. To me, that's a signal that we are getting close to this weaponization of energy all around the world. I don't think it's a far reach to think that, but I think that'll hit around midsummer. Then we have to look at the impact of energy and digital anything. And right now, if this isn't obvious to you yet, I'd like to make it obvious to you. The World Economic Forum is a bad organization. If you know nothing about them, you should certainly learn them. Sun Tzu said it best, if you know your enemy and you know yourself, you will never lose a battle. But if you only know your enemy and do not know yourself, you will lose every battle. So understand who you are and follow your enemy. The World Economic Forum is absolutely the enemy of freedom and the people. And about 2 years ago, they said within 2 years, we would be in a cyber pandemic that is approaching. I believe that there are signs everywhere that we are currently in cyber warfare. I'll give you some examples. A really funny one to me, because most people don't think critically. Please think critically. When you hear something from the mainstream media or the government, really think through what they're saying and try to find out whether or not it's true and then see what it really is. Here's a great example. A couple of weeks ago, we were told that a solar flare from the sun, hundreds of thousands of miles, millions of miles away from Earth, a solar flare, which is basically an electromagnetic field or an electromagnetic pulse, an EMP, one of these electromagnetic pulses left the sun, traveled to Earth, and it took out AT&T for 3.5 hours. Okay, that's the story we're told. There was no cell phone usage. I was in quantum physics before this and quantum biology. I understand EMF and EMP extremely well. That must be the most well-refined EMP ever created, because it only impacted one cell carrier. If you believe a solar flare took out AT&T, you need to understand what's happening in the world. An EMP or an EMF coming from outer space would take out every cell phone carrier and primarily many of the electronics. I believe that the AT&T outage was part of a larger scale cyber war. We are at war with other nations, and part of a military process in an invasion or a war would be to take out communications of the enemy. Keep that in mind. We also have seen Meta, Facebook. I'm not calling X Twitter. I'm calling Twitter, and Facebook. Facebook went down. Instagram went down. LinkedIn went down. The Department of Homeland Security has gone down. ICE's website went down. Not ISIS, but ICE. The border patrol organization, or illegal immigrant organization, their website went down, as did the Secret Service website. So in the last 8 days, we've seen Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, the Department of Homeland Security, ICE, and the Secret Service's websites have all gone down, along with hundreds of very large, very important websites all around the world. This is a big problem, a trend that people should pay attention to, because if I'm correct in this, this is a really big issue. When power goes out, communications go out, or websites go out, chaos will ensue. You know, the world by itself is no more than 9 meals away from chaos. This is a very old special forces saying. The world is 9 meals away from chaos. And we just had 85% of the beef in Texas be affected by a large fire that took out 550 buildings. That could cause supply shortages in the future, along with solar flares impacting one specific cell phone company. Now, a couple things to look at here. That number one, I want to give the state of South Carolina congratulations. You just became the 29th constitutional carry in the country. You are allowed to live by the Second Amendment freely, uninfringed, because the Second Amendment does say that it shall not be infringed. So in South Carolina, you've now joined 28 other states with legal carrying of legally owned weapons. They do not do these things by accident. There are 15 million people in this country. We don't know who they are. 29 states have now authorized constitutional carry. We have power outages, communications blackouts happening right now, and a pending economic collapse. These are very serious things. I'm going to try to make light of them if I can, but these are very serious trends. Now, I've been talking for a long time, about 2 years on these, about the areas that I'm invested in and the things that I'm doing. You don't have to do it. Yeah, of course. Take this is not financial advice. I'm not giving financial advice. I'm talking about my own portfolio. For the last 2 years, I have been focused in on gold, silver, raw land, oil and gas investments, and Bitcoin. And you could take that as cryptocurrency as you if you like. But Bitcoin is what I'm going to talk about because the entire world's talking about it and very few people know about it. So in the next 2 weeks, I will have a full what is Bitcoin simplicity for people. Not trying to get you to buy into it. It's trying to provide as much education as possible. I've spent about 2,000 hours in this space, met everyone in the universe that's into this. And I feel like I have a strong grasp on it and I'm very convicted. I'm also convicted that there might be one or two cryptocurrencies that succeed, but for my own taste, I look for a complete decentralization, and that's provided by Bitcoin. But Bitcoin and NVIDIA have been the two big stories. Now, both of them have had some issues. NVIDIA is up, 400-500% in the last year. NVIDIA just dropped 10% in 30 minutes, about an hour and a half ago. Bitcoin broke $70,000, and for the third time, Coinbase collapsed. So you're watching every time the Bitcoin runs up to a certain amount, Coinbase shuts down for 10, 12, 15 minutes. These to me are indicators. Again, cyber warfare is very possible. Our government does not want you to be prosperous. They want you to be poor to control you. And these things are certainly happening. Now, in precious metals, we're seeing great breakthroughs. The price of gold is nearing $2,200. If you've been following these episodes long enough, you know that I was telling you to buy gold at $1,650. Which is where I was buying gold. So gold holds value. It's definitely increasing, but you got to think about where gold makes its money. Gold makes its money. It's more valuable when there's blood in the street. That's just an old saying. Gold is only valuable when there's blood in the street. The scenarios I just described to you could be advantageous for gold and disadvantageous for humanity. So I never want to downplay that and be economically focused. I don't want to see what I believe is coming, but I also believe it serves a purpose to reveal corruption in this country so we can correct it and get back to sound money and better practices. Now, precious metals has a very good opportunity ahead of it. We've seen about five or six major gold mines shut down while the price of gold was below 2000. They're now starting to stimulate mining. It's also something to think about. I'm gonna go into in a couple of weeks, gold-backed money. I could go on for about 2 hours. I'm trying to keep this short for you here today. But the silver production in the nation of Mexico and Peru, which are the two largest providers of silver, are now at a 14-year low. Silver is still under $25. I think it's a good buy. If nothing else, gold and silver aren't going to lose you money. I think everyone should have money in precious metals so that they maintain buying power, while the dollar, which is absolutely set for a 30, maybe 45% decline in buying power at some given time in the next year or two, that will maintain your buying power. You want to look towards other riskier assets. And it depends how you look at risk, by the way. But you look at Bitcoin as an off-ramp from the traditional centralized community. What most people don't understand is how Bitcoin works. I don't have time to explain it to you in this short video, but I can tell you from an investor perspective or someone wanting to make money as an economy collapses, you're not going to find a better time. The Bitcoin halving is coming up. There are billions of dollars being poured in every day by ETFs. There's plenty of great people out there. I think if you wanted to find a video to learn more about Bitcoin, I would go to Robert Breedlove's What is Money podcast. As a friend of mine, he's also just incredible at walking through the basics. He does a really good 8-part series with Michael Saylor. I would check out Robert Breedlove's What is Money podcast. I think you'll get a lot of benefit from it and understanding centralized versus decentralized currency. And it's a no-nonsense podcast. It's not hyperbole. It doesn't hit, you know, we want people to be in decentralized products, but there's no sales pitch to it. It's strictly educational. Now, the other things that I'm looking at for economic indicators that other people don't is scam calls. I'm sure many of you are getting bombarded with political texts and phone calls, but at the same time, you're getting a lot of scam phone calls. As economies collapse, scams become more prevalent. I'm looking at the price of fast food. Recently, somebody published an article that in, I think, Pennsylvania, that Five Guys burgers and fries cost $24 for a hamburger, french fries, and a soda. These are indicators, real-world indicators as to where we're heading. Inflation is not 3%. Inflation is actually right around 17 or 18% and going higher because we are printing $1 trillion every 100 days. It is absolutely illogical to believe that inflation is 3% when you print $1 trillion every 100 days. So a lot of stuff to cover there. A lot of stuff to think about. I don't want to sit here and spoon feed you the answers, but what I think we're going to see in the coming year, I think we are definitely going to see a communications disruption at some point in time. You started to see it last night on Truth Social. You couldn't get on for a few minutes during the State of the Union while President Trump was posting things on there. Most cyber attacks in this country come from three or four groups. And it's not always Russia. It happens all the time. But we are watching, by the way, speaking of Russia and some of these other countries, Russia is now the second largest Bitcoin miner in the world next to the United States. They have tried to shut down Bitcoin mining in the United States for energy infringement, saying it uses too much power. We don't have enough power, which is a falsehood as well. Actually, Bitcoin helps stabilize power grids by buying surplus energy and using waste product from oil and gas refineries. And from the oil and gas field, they buy flare gas from oil and gas companies, which is normally just burned off and actually pollutes the environment. So a lot of things going on right now, but I want to give you a quick breakdown. I think that the banking sector, I think we're going to see in the next 3 to 6 months, many regional banks close down. I think it's going to have a ripple effect through the entire stock market. I think the stock market has some pumping and illusory pumping ready to go. I think we will see back at around 41, 42,000 on the Dow before it collapses. And I think the S&P 500 will hit around 5,500 before it actually starts to decline. I think we will also see by the summer extremely high energy prices as energy is weaponized, as more and more war mounts around the world. And most importantly, I think that we're going to really feel the effects of illegal immigration financially and socially by right around election time. So I know this is a lot of stuff to go through, but I think the most important thing we can all do that I do every day at noon online, every morning and every night is build your relationship with God, get in prayer, love your family. Focus in on God, family, country, your life becomes very simple. And just understand that right now you live in a very deceptive world. An information war is happening right in front of you. And I hope to be able to be some sort of a sidekick for you along this to see what I see. Doesn't mean I'm always right. But at the same time, I think it's very paramount to be a critical thinker in these periods and really think for yourself and really simplify your investment strategy down to tangible hard goods, hard assets, and then find some sort of an upside play with Bitcoin or crypto, whatever it is that you believe will work. But because you're going to see big upside in there, you're going to see a lot of money pour out of banks looking for decentralized homes. Just be very careful on who claims to be decentralized and who actually is. There are a lot of traps in crypto. There are a lot of banks involved in crypto. The purpose of crypto comes from the Cyberpunk Manifesto, which basically means we want to separate money from state. I agree with that. So start separating your money from the state. Getting more into hard assets, away from cash in the banks. I think cash is dangerous, especially with banks failing. I would advise not, you know, everyone will tell you, well, go to JP Morgan and Wells. They're in trouble too, guys. These are the largest users of the reverse repo market, but they happen to have a lot of government backing behind them that'll give them stability. And they're not going to go anywhere because it's part of a takeover of a country. It's to centralize banking, centralize police forces. Look for small community credit unions that don't do business lending, commercial real estate lending, or take business accounts, that just simply act as a store of value for your deposits. And I think you'll be very safe and comfortable. You also get better yields. They pay on checking and savings. So do that, get some gold, get some silver, buy some Bitcoin, use a company called Unchained Capital. I think they're fantastic. They make it easy for you to do Bitcoin. I don't get paid by any of these people, by the way. It's just people I use in my life, just trying to offer some information and some help to all of you. But through this coming year, I think it's very important to be very grounded in your thinking, very centrally focused on thinking through the fog that's broadcast to you every day. And most importantly, continually stay calm through this whole process. Calmer heads will prevail, and in money, calmer heads will profit. So until next issue of the Rice Report, which is now available, I think this will now be available on iHeartRadio, iTunes, Rumble, YouTube, all across the board, a lot of different places. So I don't charge for this. I don't run ads. I have no interest in that. I self-finance the whole thing. I'm building a studio on my own. But if this information is something you like, please just share it with someone else or invite them over to your home, have some fellowship with them, watch this information, talk about it, and share it with someone else. If we don't start sharing this information, we're never going to know. They're never going to let us understand what's happening unless we're looking through the fog ourselves. So until next time, I'm Eric Rice. Thank you so much for coming. God bless you all. And I look forward to our next meeting. Have a good one, everybody.